Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast, and you're joining us right after the Grand Prix of Brazil. It was a spectacular weekend. I just can't put it in any other way. Unfortunately, I couldn't be joined by Samantha, but instead we have a new guest on the podcast, and I'd like to welcome you to the podcast, Savannah. Savannah from South Africa. Great to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Anton. Lovely to be on as well. And hi to all the listeners.
And you picked the right weekend to come on, because I think, I just called it spectacular, but again, I don't know any other way in which to put it.
Yeah, I definitely think it was a bit of an insane weekend at the very most. Everything that could have happened did happen, but I'm just glad we have our race results now after the many decisions from the stewards.
Exactly. It's been quite a bit of a wait. It's been somewhat of a trend this season. But I'm actually glad that results weren't altered. Just to start it off with, who was your driver of the day today?
I definitely picked Verstappen. I definitely think he drove with his all this race, and he very much deserved it in the conditions that they were in. I think we all know that he is capable of driving in the manner that he did today. But I think applause to all drivers that made it through to the end of the race. It was a very tricky weekend, I think, from the get-go. We could have hoped for a better one, but it was entertaining nonetheless.
Well, I think that's a very proper way to put it. Let's try and go through the weekend a little bit chronologically. We knew beforehand that it might be a little bit tipsy-turny with the weather conditions, which it ended up being. We had a newly laid track surface here in Brazil, and I think one of the first things that was unfortunate, I would say, for Magnussen was that he was ill ahead of the weekend, so he wasn't driving in the Haas. Instead, we had Behrmann taking over that car, and a good shot for him to have another drive. And I think what is his third weekend, if I'm not mistaken. He had driven for Ferrari once this year, and then this is his second drive for Haas. So I guess good to get some experience in for him, although not the easiest of weekends. I think for him also the first time that he experienced these type of weather conditions in a Formula One car. So that was one of the things ahead of this weekend. Other than that, well, of course, As we all know, it was a sprint weekend. Savannah, how do you feel in general about the sprint format compared to the regular race format?
I definitely think it adds a little bit more pressure to not only the audience to actually engage with the sport itself on a bit of a longer period of time over the weekend. But I think the population or popularity of F1 has taken the world by storm in the last couple of years. So I think regardless of sprint weekend or not, it's not necessarily much different. I definitely just think the camaraderie and spirit amongst the different F1 communities around the globe just comes to a forefront for sprint weekend.
Yeah, true. And of course, with the sprint weekend, we all know that we only have a single free practice session, which of course for the drivers and the teams is a little bit tougher because they don't get the same amount of time to get the setup right. And especially in a weekend where you don't know what the conditions are going to go towards, that makes it extra difficult. But of course, actually for the viewer, it's quite exciting. I'm starting to really get a good feeling about these sprint weekends, especially if they pick the right tracks to do them at. And I think that we can conclude also that Brazil is a good track to do a sprint weekend at. We were concluding the same thing after Austin, which is also a good track for overtakes, several opportunities around the track to make overtakes, and it's the same thing here in Brazil. I think the sprint race by itself was very exciting, but let's go to the sprint shootout first before we get to the sprint. And I think if we look at the three sessions, of course, in the first session we already had Alonso out, which was a bit of a shocker. A couple of interesting names to make it through to Q2 were Behrmann, who we just mentioned, and also Colapinto, as well as Lawson. I think in Q2, The main headline would be that both Hamilton and Perez didn't make it into Q3.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I think Hamilton had a bit of a struggle the entire weekend, looking at his results. He wasn't happy with the car, and it seemed to be a lot of aquaplaning as expected with that torrential downpour. Quite a bit of bottoming and porpoising from what we could tell. And I think it's definitely something that Mercedes will look at possibly for next year's design on their car. Because this is, I think, out of the season, the heaviest rain, if not the only rain. I stand corrected. But I definitely think everyone was thrown for a bit of a knock this weekend that they weren't expecting. But I definitely do think Hamilton still kept it together very nicely towards the end of everything.
Yeah, it's good that you pointed out, because it already started in the first practice session, actually, where he was complaining towards the end of the session that he wasn't feeling well in the car. And we would have the same thing on Sunday, where he was also very uncomfortable. And it was quite an interesting difference between how he and how his teammate George Russell felt in the car. But whereas Hamilton and Perez didn't make it into Q3, a couple of other names that did were, again, Behrmann, who made it at the expense of Hülkenberg, actually, his teammate, who has been known for qualifying quite well throughout this season. Mm. So apart from that, we also had Albon went through, and Lawson went through as well, who, of course, hasn't been driving this V-carb for very long and is in a good and interesting battle with Tsunoda. But I guess we'll get to the two of them later on in the podcast, because that would be an interesting one to follow throughout the weekend as well. Going into Q3, and now mentioning Q3, but also somebody I would like to mention that made it into Q3 was Gasly. And I think Alpine is another team that we will talk about for quite a bit. But already there, a very good performance from Gasly. Going into Q3, it was did it surprise you to see Piastri on pole rather than Norris, who I think has been out qualifying Piastri overall throughout the season? But a very good performance of Piastri, no?
I think Norris, he had a bit of a wobble this weekend, in all honesty. I'm looking at it from my own personal perspective, but I think both McLarens have been on form for quite a while now in the running, and they've shown it time and time again. But I definitely do think Piastri was the stronger of the two McLarens this weekend. He showed it by holding position in the sprint right till the end, when the driver swap was given from the team orders. And even in the race, he was holding position quite well until that unfortunate red flag for the McLarens came out.
So there, you're already touching upon it. So let's just get into the sprint and McLaren and their strategy and the way that they handled the swapping of positions between Norris and Piastri. Because I don't know about you, I was talking about it with a friend before the sprint, and we were saying that, well, they'll probably try to do it early on in the sprint, because, you know, at the start of it, they're probably still quite close together. It's probably going to be the most convenient moment to make a switch. But that turned out to be quite a bit more dramatic than it, I guess, than all of the McLaren team would have liked to see beforehand. And I think very early on, it was Norris on the radio was already commenting that they had spoken about it beforehand, and I don't think it turned out exactly as planned beforehand. So interesting, as another chapter on McLaren team radio, which we've seen throughout this season, of course, starting at Hungary. But this was another episode that was quite, I don't know how to put it, but how'd you experience that?
I definitely do think that Austria was a bit of the talk of the town when it did happen. But yeah, if we're looking at this most current sprint, I definitely do think both McLarens had the pace to hold position regardless of who had pole at the beginning of the sprint. But I definitely do think that if the team orders weren't given, Piastri would have won the sprint fair and square. But you touched on the call being given a little bit more earlier in the sprint. I wasn't surprised, actually, that they kept the setup of Piastri-Norris throughout the sprint, purely because I was anticipating the DRS from Piastri given to Norris would have been helping him through the conditions that they were driving in. And then again at the last moment, Norris coming through to take the final win at the end of the day. So I definitely do think Piastri was playing the team the game. He played it very well. And I definitely do think hats off to him for keeping composure throughout that race to help his teammates. They work really well together, in my opinion.
So you're saying you think that if they would have swapped earlier, then Norris would have been holding up Piastri, making sure that basically Leclerc and Verstappen would be able to catch up with them?
Yeah, I definitely do think that if that swap had happened earlier, Norris would have kept Piastri in his slipstream with DRS around the track, and that would have started quite a competitive DRS train with Leclerc and Verstappen right on his tail. And I definitely do think Piastri seemed to have a little bit more pace than Norris did. He seemed to be a little bit more comfortable in the cockpit throughout the entire weekend, if I'm being quite honest.
Yeah, I had thought that because up until lap 13, the first four were quite close together, but then there was a certain moment when Leclerc had to defend Verstappen off and then created somewhat of a gap between him and Norris, and then the two McLarens were sort of creating that gap, and I thought that at that point they would switch. And I had been thinking, you know, you don't know what's going to come ahead, and what like you were saying in the very beginning of the podcast, everything that could happen happened, because of course the danger is if you're going to get a late safety car or a late virtual safety car, then all of a sudden you're not able to make that switch anymore. And that safety car did come, or the virtual safety did come, because of Hülkenberg stalling on track. And it took them a while, no, before we saw a virtual safety car. It was only a yellow flag in Sector 2 for a while, which made sure that the McLarens could still make that swap before it became a virtual safety car.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, the virtual safety car, I think threw the middle cars of the pack a little bit. And then Verstappen came through and made it his mission that upon Leclerc, he was going to ensure that Leclerc used up his battery power, so that when the time came for Verstappen to overtake, Leclerc didn't have that defense mechanism of using his battery power to hold position. And in the end, it worked for Verstappen in all ways possible. Leclerc did a fantastic job of doing what he did to keep Verstappen behind him, but it just wasn't enough for the Scuderia, unfortunately.
True, and then we would find out later that after the race that Verstappen during that virtual safety car had not kept to the delta time. So of course, if there's a virtual safety car, you're not allowed to drive the lap under a certain delta time, but he did, and that gave him another 5-second penalty, which led that Leclerc in the end finished P3 instead of Verstappen, who was only, I think it was only 4.1 seconds behind Verstappen. So actually the gap was close to being 5 seconds, but I guess at that point in time we were still thinking that Norris could definitely make another gap or close the gap for the world championship. Interesting sprint result, interesting sprint race. And I guess after the sprint race, we would we would all make ourselves up for watching qualifying session that in the end was postponed until it didn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't dictate the weather. The weather's going to dictate what's happening around you. I think that they kind of threw a spanner in the works, no pun intended, for all the mechanics that worked on the cars during the race today. it was a lot of shuffling around and playing the weather's game instead of the other way around of playing the driver's game. I think it was definitely a situation where all teams were in the situation of possibly rethinking strategy, whether it was tires, pit stop times, and all that sort of information. It was all up in the air for quite a while before everything started settling down and actually being more clear to, I think, all teams overall.
And how did you enjoy a Super Sunday, or I don't know what way to put it, but having a Sunday where we both have a qualifying and a race at the same day is quite packed. It's a little bit of a different feel to it, but I enjoyed it a lot. But and we haven't seen that a lot. I think the last time when we saw it was Suzuka 2019, when we had similar weather conditions. And I guess it all played a role into how the Sunday would be with, well, like we were already saying, I think we had a couple of rain races at the beginning of the year, but it's been a while, and on-track fighting has been so good that we haven't really needed any rain recently for the races to be exciting. But this weather definitely changed all the circumstances, and I guess the qualifying session for the race was one of the most exciting ones of this year, at least for me.
Yeah, on my front too. This is probably one of the most jam-packed qualifying sessions I think I've ever watched in my life. And yeah, like you said, Super Sunday, I also thoroughly enjoyed it. I can't say I've ever experienced a Super Sunday myself up until now and currently. But yeah, as far as I can recall, looking back at the calendars and the previous races, it was around 2019 that we had the same sort of situation where qualifying and the race happened on the same day. And I definitely think, overall, I think it takes a toll on teams. I mean, if we're looking at all the mechanics that were needing to basically rebuild cars for the race, it was a race to the finish line overall. And I think they worked really, really well and under the time constraints they had. I know Sainz's team, unfortunately, had to go through the Parc Fermé infringement. And that's why he had his pit lane start in the race. But I definitely think for how he drove before he had to DNF, he drove really well and was on the mend from where he was starting from the pit lane.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective, that of the mechanics, because you're right. And right after the qualifying for the race, I think it was George Russell who said in his post-quali interview that he quite enjoyed this setup of having the qualifying at the same day as the race. But of course, yeah, for mechanics of teams that have cars that crash, it's a slightly highly pressured situation, especially if you have both cars crashing out. Because of course, we had Colapinto and Albon in the qualifying who crashed. We had Stroll and Alonso who both went off track. So of course, it gives very little time for teams to prepare cars if they, if they have to rebuild the whole car basically. Of course, we wouldn't have Albon at the start of the race. He damaged his car so badly, and I think the crash, I don't think even in the actual during the. I didn't see the crash happening on F1 TV. I guess they weren't sure how Albon's situation was, so I think that must have been the reason why they didn't show it. But we saw quite a lot of different crashes. I mentioned the Colapinto one, which was in Q1. Talking about Q1, I think there another shock elimination for Hamilton, who didn't make it further than Q2 in the sprint qualification or the sprint shootout, but didn't even make it further than Q1 in the qualification for the race. And also Norris was very close to being eliminated. He ended up on P15, but it was very close to not making it into Q2 there for Norris. And I guess of course, yeah, during these type of weather conditions, it's much more about, you know, driver skill rather than only pure performance of the car. And it's interesting to see which drivers actually float to the top, and you see some drivers perform very well that you're not used to seeing in Q2 and Q3 every other day. And I think that made it super exciting. What did you make of that Hamilton elimination there?
Yeah, I mean, like we touched on a little bit earlier, Hamilton had been saying on radio messages the entire weekend he was really, really struggling in the car. And again, I think he gave it his all, but it didn't work in his favour. And I definitely think that looking at what happened to him specifically, in the timing that it happened, it was that second of being pushed out by that move from Norris in the final moments of Q1, where Norris just managed to get through, that changed the game. Hamilton was sitting quite comfortably for 1 or 2 seconds before Norris crossed the line, and that ultimately put the final nail in the coffin for Hamilton's run in the qualifying.
Right, and we saw already in that Q1 session that I think it was only Bottas who was on intermediate tires. All the other cars were on full wets. And we would see then in the Q2 session that actually it was Piastri who went very early on the intermediate tire. I think he set a third time. And after that, basically all the other cars also went on intermediate tires. And it was basically a free-for-all and you know, tumbling times, and the track became, I guess, more clear and clear of water and faster up until we had a crash for Carlos Sainz. That would put the Q2 session to a short halt, after which we continued again. And then there was another crash for Lance Stroll. And we saw that it took quite a while before the red flag was flown. I think I've actually looked it up and compared the times between the different crashes and how long it took before they flew a red flag, because that was obviously what Verstappen was very vocal about on the interview after the qualifying session. So after that Colapinto crash, it took them 12 seconds to fly a red flag. With Sainz, it was 18 seconds. Later, we would have a Alonso crash in Q3. That took them 19 seconds. And it took them 52 seconds after Stroll beached it for them to put that red flag. That's a bit long, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely do think when you compare times from the other crashes that happened this weekend, the 52-odd seconds where nothing's happening and everybody's second guessing what they need to do next, it's not fair on anybody who's still on track. And I think when you put in this position of those people who make the judgment calls for when certain events like crashes in Stroll's instance happen, it needs to be on a level or standard that it remains consistent. There's no excuse to be not focused on your task at hand if you have been positioned to look out for that sort of thing as a marshal or the FIA, who also have their eyes and ears in the background. So, I mean, I understand where Verstappen's frustration is coming from, where that influenced him, and I want to say Perez, but I mean, Perez is a bit of a wild card at the moment. He's either really good or kind of dwindling at the bottom of the pack. But yeah, I think Verstappen had his sights set on one thing and one thing only, and that was obviously to achieve what he achieved in the race. And he knew that his 5 place grid penalty was a major influence of where he needed to qualify. But ultimately, it doesn't seem to matter where he qualifies. He can still get to P1 regardless. So I think I stand with the way Verstappen had to handle the media, obviously with some foul language that was probably playing in the back of his mind, but was said a little bit more cautiously to the media. But yeah, I definitely do think that a more consistent level of decision making on track could have been taken forward. Seems that all 3 that you mentioned before sat with before the 22nd mark. It was that instantaneous response of, okay, yellow flags come out, possibly a double yellow flag. They check that they get the response or radio message to say that the driver's okay, back to the pit wall. And if that's happened and they can clearly see that the car is not drivable or cannot come back onto track safely, in my opinion, a red flag should be called due to that fact. I mean, when we look at Sainz's crash, that entire rear wheel setup was completely smashed in. It seemed to be that the exhaust was sitting skew, that back tail fin had to be snapped off essentially when the marshals came to remove the car from the barriers. And I mean, he hit it quite deep. It was quite a big thing that he couldn't get out of. It was inevitable the way he did take that one turn that caused the ultimate crash itself. So yeah, I stand with Verstappen and what he said, and I definitely do think that it could have been done much more efficiently from the marshals, the stewards, and the FIA side.
No, I fully agree with you there, and I think what you said there, the key word really is consistency, because I guess that's what we're all after, that's what we all want to see. I think there were people who were saying that it the decision favored McLaren. I think it was not so much that, because I think that the time that Norris had already said, well, actually, I went back to check that, and the time that Norris had on the board would have been enough to get him into Q2. But the difference would have been that if the red flag would have been called immediately, we wouldn't have been within that 2-minute time limit, which basically, you know, after the last 2 minutes of the qualifying session, if we get a red flag, the session is not resumed, and the crash happened before that 2-minute mark. And if the red flag would have flown directly, then after that, after getting the car off track, the rest could have gone back on track and set another lap. And I think that that was Verstappen's main frustration. But you mentioned something else there. You mentioned the 5-place grip penalty for Verstappen, which we knew going into the weekend that he would head for the race. That was announced before the start of FP1, which actually meant that everybody could take that into account with their predictions. But we're going to get to that as well. That would have been an interesting, some interesting food for thought, because I guess we were all thinking that he would at least place himself somewhere within the top 10 and then get those 5-place grip penalties, but qualifying 12, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, that would have put him to place 17. You mentioned there Perez also, who qualified on 13, and I think in Q3 the rest of what we saw was a very interesting session, though, where it was time stumbling between Norris, between Ocon, we saw Lawson, we saw Tsunoda, and yeah, of course, in the end, Russell, who put it also on the front row, but Tsunoda actually made it to the third place and thereby got his on-track interview. I think it was, for me at least, it was super exciting to see Yuki and to see actually him finding it out there with Lawson. Like I mentioned previously, of course, the two have that second Red Bull seat in the back of their minds. So it was very interesting to see a session where actually two V-carbs were in Q3 without any Red Bull. And of course, there was also only one Ferrari, there was only one Mercedes, which left some room for others. Unfortunately, Albon would have a pretty heavy crash, wouldn't even make it to the race. But it was interesting, no, to see Tsunoda on P3, to see Ocon on P4, to see Lawson on P5. Not something you see every day.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I mean, the man from Japan had a plan, essentially.
nice one.
Yuki had a weekend to remember, in my opinion, the Sao Paulo Grand Prix. He also went into the game headstrong, knowing what he needed to do. And like you mentioned, that Red Bull seat that is possibly up for grabs is looming over their heads, him and Lawson. And again, seeing that Lawson is new to the scene of this season, taking over from Daniel Ricciardo, he's definitely shown that he's capable of doing what needs to be done. And I think for everybody out there, it was a bit of a shocker when qualifying happened and suddenly both bulls were out before Q3. And it was basically a reverse card for RB and the Bulls. So I definitely think that made it a little bit more entertaining than usual. But obviously, I know there's a lot of fans out there that were very disappointed. And I can say, including myself, I'm a pretty big Red Bull fan, even though my heart is definitely Ferrari. But yeah, I definitely think that Yuki gave it his all this weekend. He definitely deserved that third position, and Lawson right behind him. Also, Ocon, also, he drove phenomenally. I don't think I've ever seen Ocon lead a race the way he led a race this Grand Prix. And he really had it under control in the conditions that they were sitting in. So hats off to them.
A red and blue heart, I hear. That's nice. let's get into the race. Well, of course, the whole schedule was changed because of not knowing exactly what the weather would do. So rather than have the race at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, local time, they went for 12:30. And I think, well, luckily we didn't have to postpone the qualifying session, but it did take a little bit longer than it does usually. Usually, I think it took about two hours. The race would start, but it wouldn't start in a most conventional way. What happened to our Canadian friend over there?
Yeah, Lance Stroll, he spun off during his formation lap. I think he did three turns and he said, I'm done for the day. After his mechanics kind of sat with head in hands, I would think, after repairing his car after the crash that he had early on in the day. But yeah, then it also led to the confusion over the board start procedure that started off a little bit chaotically as well, leading to quite a few infringements from multiple cars.
Yeah, definitely. No, on that Lance Stroll incident, I was super confused because not only did he was off track, but he was still on the road. I mean, he could have just put it in reverse and get back on track, but instead he just decided that he would just drive into the gravel and beach it there. It was super strange. But yeah, as you were mentioning, those formation lap aborted starts, it was a strange situation after all. And that was one of the things that we were waiting for after the race for very long to find out what would happen. I was a little bit disappointed during the race to hear that they would investigate it after the race, because I thought that potentially it could cause some penalties. So I don't really enjoy watching a race knowing that afterwards we're still going to investigate quite a large number of drivers for infringements and not really know, if somebody gets a penalty during the race, at least, you know what to count with. And we would see a couple of penalties, for instance, the 10-second penalty for Piastri. And you know that, Piastri is going to either have a 10-second gap towards the next car or not and go one place back. But if you don't know what's going to happen during the race and they're only going to investigate it after the race, I don't know, it creates a little bit of confusion. But of course, I also understand that it was not a very regular situation, because usually if we abort the formation lap, we have another formation lap and then we go to the start, but the whole start was sort of reset. And then later on in the race, they did decide to take off that one lap that they drove additionally, because we didn't do a 70 lap race, but we did a 69 lap race. So it was all, there was a bit of confusion altogether, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I think that when I was watching live, it was that instance of everybody left the starting line and started that next aborted start, and the cameras panned to Verstappen when you rode on board with him, and he was sitting there not doing anything. And when you saw the message of where's the green light, it just suddenly, hang on, there's a lot more wrong to this procedure than was being led on. So I definitely do think that the communications weren't clear for, I think, the majority of the grid, from what we could tell. It was Norris, Russell, Tsunoda and Lawson that got investigated for that incident. And subsequently got the fines that they did. So I definitely do think that it might need to be discussed again on possibly clarifying in certain situations, like the Grand Prix, this past Grand Prix situation, that when this sort of thing happens, a more clearer process can be taken to avoid unnecessary penalties or infringements from the drivers themselves? Because I think they were also sitting in the dark, and they kind of just said, okay, well, we'll take it as another formation lap and wait to see what the next command is from kind of like the head honchos sitting on pit wall.
Right. And then when we did have the start, we saw that that it was Russell who made it off the line very, very quickly and would gain that first position over Norris. From there onward, I thought that it was going to be a race between the two of them.
I mean, Russell got a much stronger launch from that start than Norris did. And I definitely think that while that chase was on, in the back of everyone's mind, sitting in that top 10 was, when is Verstappen coming? Because I think definitely everybody knew that he had the pace and would overtake quite swiftly and easily from that back of the pack. And obviously the event then unfolded as he climbed the ranks throughout the race.
I was confused because when not so long after the start, still in lap one, I think, I saw one of the Red Bulls who was losing grip, and I thought that it was Verstappen because it was the Red Bull further back that was slippery and snapping. But right there at the start, Verstappen had taken, I think he had a good launch, and then I think on turn three he just basically went around all of those guys there driving at the back and made up so many positions in the beginning already. And at the same time, Perez had the very opposite of starts, and I think that would already set the tone for the rest of the race. No, and I guess if we look at the race as a whole, I suppose it's pretty obvious that we can tell that it was those cars who stayed out for longer who were able to obviously make use of that red flag that we would have gotten later on, and thus make a tire change and thus not lose that pit stop that all the others had already made. I think it was Leclerc who first went into the pits to change his inters for new inters during a time where we didn't really know what the weather was going to do. I think we heard from various teams on the radio that it was going to pour down a little bit more before it would later get dry. So, you know, I think more teams could have taken that guess to continue on those intermediates and just see what happens. And then in the back of your mind, also having that safety car that could potentially happen. We did get a virtual safety car, actually. And under that virtual safety car, there were a couple of drivers who pitted. And actually, Norris and I think both Norris and Russell did too.
Yeah.
But very late when the virtual safety car was already ending, and thus also not really profiting from that. Then we would get the red flag, and I think it was the three drivers. The three drivers plus Bottas, who also didn't pit, but of course the Saubers are so far back on the grid that, unfortunately, because, I mean, if there would have been a race where they would have been able to get points this season, I think it would have been this one. But unfortunately, didn't happen for them. It did happen for Alpine. And I think that was something we need to highlight, because I asked you at the beginning of the episode, who was your driver of the day? And I don't have too much to argue against Verstappen. I mean, winning the race where you start from P17 is pretty spectacular. But what Ocon and Gasly did was very spectacular as well.
Yeah, no, Ocon and Gasly drove masterclass from their side during the race. They definitely locked into what the focus for the team was, and I think they executed it perfectly. I don't think they could have asked for a better result to the end of the race. And I mean, the lead from Ocon through almost half the race was absolutely spectacular to watch. I think a lot of people sometimes underestimate his abilities in the car. But then again, he's the one sitting in the car, not us. So we have to trust his judgment when he does make judgment calls. And I think this weekend showed that the Alpine definitely has the capabilities of any of the other cars in a situation like this weekend, where everybody was almost neutralized with certain types of weather conditions, and it just worked in Alpine's favor right till the very end.
Definitely, and I think Ocon showed not only during the race but also during qualifying, because throughout all of the sessions he was topping the times a couple of times, and also during Q3 he was very quick. He was always there, just all in all super performance. And I never really expected him to keep that lead, but he actually did for quite a while. I saw a stat that now they made a list of all the drivers and how many laps they've led during the season. I don't know if you've seen it, but apparently Perez has only led one lap during the season, and Ocon now has 14 times that.
Yes, I did see that. Quite a bit of a laugh. Looking at
a bit of an awkward one.
Yeah, where you see where the teams sit in the Constructors' Championship. I mean, I think we all know, or most of us know, Red Bull as the top of the charts, and it seemed to be that this season was a bit of a slip from them. I don't know what could have caused it, but from my personal point of view, I think with all the staff changes that have happened throughout the season, it's had a bit of an impact on the mindset of certain key factors being brought into play by Red Bull. By no means am I knocking Red Bull in the actual performance overall. I definitely do think with the issues or tricky situations that they are put in, whether it be penalties in grid placement or actual issues with the car, they definitely still are in the fight. And I think that it's more of looking at where Alpine has now landed up in 6th in the Constructors' Championship instead of 9th. That's one major jump.
Exactly.
It's one major jump for a team
Incredible.
To go through in one weekend.
33 points, yeah.
Yeah, so I definitely do think that looking at it from that perspective, again, masterclass performance from Alpine, I think all round, including mechanics, pit wall, behind the scenes, drivers, you name it. I think everybody was on top of their game this weekend, and I think they can all be proud about it. And I hope to see this sort of thing from them again in the future, as well as the rest of the teams who are sitting towards the bottom of the pack. Because I definitely do think that at some given point, each team has got their own high point that they showcase, whether it be speed in the long runs or speed in slow corners. Each team has the specific strategy and setup for the year that's constantly changing with upgrades, obviously. But it's what makes the championship a little bit more interesting, seeing where teams like Alpine suddenly come out of the woodworks and show what they've got.
Yeah, and it was just great to see the whole team celebrating that podium. And I think it was since 1997 that we had two French drivers on the podium, and it was great to watch. And it's of course these type of performances that for me really make F1 what is F1. Like you don't see these things every day, and then once they do happen, it's just there's a lot of emotion in there, and I think it's great to see. Something else that I wanted to touch upon is a color of flag that we haven't seen in a while. It was Hülkenberg who got shown a black flag and was disqualified. I didn't see, because I think they went back into the camera shot when he was just reversing and then driving back on track. I didn't realize that he was being pushed back on track, but apparently he wasn't, and that was the reason that he would be disqualified, unfortunately, for him.
Yeah, unfortunately, the assistance that he'd gotten didn't play in his favor. And I mean, you touched on it a little bit earlier, where you said, I mean, this track, Hülkenberg's pretty good at with his performance overall. But it didn't seem to be the case this weekend. I don't know if the mojo at Haas was maybe off with Magnussen off sick. And I hope that he really recovers well for the next race. But yeah, I think Haas really had to step up to the plate with bringing in Behrmann, as well as having tricky conditions. and working through situations that were not necessarily wanted from their side. But yeah, I didn't realize it either when the black flag was shown that he was actually being assisted back onto track. When it came forward and I saw him being rolled back into his garage during that red flag call, it was a bit of an eye-opener because we haven't seen that this season or for a good long while in the sport. But I definitely do think that Haas was probably not the happiest team on the grid during the race. Seeing that Hülkenberg was then out for the rest of the, or the remainder of the laps to go. But yeah, I definitely think from Behrmann's side, he showed tenacity this weekend. He's also come into the game quite recently of F1. And he's definitely showing his potential. And there's a lot of room to grow. I mean, him, Colapinto, Lawson. I think Lawson's been on the scene for a bit of a while, but we've got Colapinto, Behrmann, and one or two other guys that are coming into the scene that really, really improve while they are in the actual cockpit of the F1 cars. And it's seen. I mean, if you look at team principals like Toto, he definitely nurtures the relationship of understanding, assisting, informing the new driver. I forget the driver's name that's coming in for Mercedes next year.
Antonelli.
Antonelli, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and of course we're going to see Doohan, and it's yeah. Nice to see these young drivers getting chances. And of course, well, you mentioned Behrmann, then of course Colapinto didn't have the greatest of weekends, but it's exciting to see these new drivers come on the scene. And actually, it's going to be an interesting one with Behrmann and Ocon next year in that Haas. And you're right mentioning there that the Haas just had a little bit of an off weekend, because actually in recent times they've been performing very, very well. And yeah, maybe it's just a one-off, we'll see. Talking about other teams that perhaps could have made better use of the Sunday, I think McLaren is another one to mention. I think Norris should have definitely finished higher up the field. I think after a safety car restart, he slipped and Russell overtook him. And actually, going back to Alpine, I was definitely not expecting Gasly to hold off Russell for as long as he did. So we were already applauding the performance of Ocon, but I would also just still like to add that Gasly also had an amazing performance and had an amazing Sunday. And I really didn't expect that to happen. But of course, back on Norris, yeah, I think, of course, in the end, when he got back into the pack behind Piastri, Piastri gave him that place. Team orders again. Piastri himself would in the end finish behind Tsunoda because of that 10-second penalty. And Tsunoda on his end, I guess, probably very happy with this weekend, finishing ahead of his teammate. But yeah, so a very positive performance there for VCAR. But for McLaren, I think this is probably the one that puts the title aspirations, at least for the drivers' championship. I mean, of course, it's a whole other story on the constructors' championship. But yeah, I think this Brazil weekend has shown in which side it's going to turn towards. No.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. I think when looking at the drivers' championship, we obviously had Norris take second place from Leclerc a little bit earlier in the season. And even with Red Bull and Max not being on the top of their game, it seems to be that they actually still are in it to win it. Max hasn't given up hope. The light at the end of the tunnel is nearing. I mean, we've got 3 races left for the season, which is crazy to think of how fast this year has gone. I mean, I've been measuring it in Grand Prix weekends. And there's only 24 of them in a 52-week year. But I think looking at the way the Drivers' Championship has almost unfolded for the year, we saw Leclerc win Monaco earlier in the year, which was a spectacular race. I think everybody thoroughly enjoyed that one. We saw Norris get his maiden win. We saw Piastri get his maiden win. All in a time that Verstappen seemed to be slipping, but he was always there right on their heels, keeping his name at the top of the board. And I think today, or the Sao Paulo Grand Prix specifically, goes to show that he's not giving up. No matter what position he's handed, no matter what position he's in, how he feels about the car, how he feels about the driving conditions, he's there to win. And he's proved that time and time again, in whatever race you want to put him in all honesty. I know his father was there at the Sao Paulo race today. And while they had their little comfort break when they were clearing one of the crashes, he still said to his father, from what we could tell, what was just being streamed, it seemed to be that the car was just sliding everywhere. It didn't seem like it when he was in the car, because he kept gaining place after place after place. And I definitely do think that if the Ferrari team can actually just put their heads down and focus on the last three races, it'll be a very, very close call between Norris and Leclerc for second place in the championship. And again, if Norris puts his head down, Verstappen's got a bit of a challenge on his hands, because it'll also be a very, very close call. And I mean, we've seen it before where, like in Mexico, I think it was Mexico if I remember correctly, where Leclerc pitted and took the fastest lap on the final lap of the race. Those sneaky strategies right. are going to be coming in fast and furious now for these last three races, because every point counts.
Yeah, and actually it seems that Ferrari this season is more on top of their game in that respect than, for example, they were last year and the year before that. And it's actually McLaren that's sort of slipping up here and there on the tactical side of things. So I agree with you completely that even though perhaps the driver championship may have been decided, but the battle for second place and definitely the constructors championship is definitely a very interesting one to follow still for those last three races of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I think we all had a bit of a shock when Red Bull was suddenly dethroned from their first position place as a constructor. We weren't used to seeing that. And I think that's when Ferrari kind of said, okay, we need to pick up the pace drastically. And it's worked in their favor so far.
And they did.
Yeah. Exactly. And I mean, they've won quite a few races after that. But I mean, if Verstappen's coming back to the form that he was in the beginning of the season, who knows if Red Bull might be chasing second place in constructors as well, if not first, if the slip-ups from McLaren and Ferrari keep appearing every now and then for the next three races.
Right, so let us turn a little bit to the scores of Forecast F1 for this weekend. But before we do so, I actually would like to rectify something which I failed to mention during last podcast episode. I was talking after Mexico about the three leaders of the championship in Forecast F1 for the full season, and I mentioned the scores of the top three. But what I failed to mention was that actually Annelie Beunemer, who was on P2 with her low score, actually dropped back to P6, and that we had a new player in P2, Philip Hoyek from Lebanon, who finished P13 last year, who was on P2 after the Mexican weekend going into this Brazil weekend. So that's something I failed to mention, but we will get to the championship of Forecast F1 in a little bit. First, I would like to count the amount of players that we had for this weekend, which was 1,063 people. And before we get to the average score, Savannah, I would like to ask you how many people you think predicted a correct podium for, well, let's do the sprint first. So how many people do you think had the podium of Norris, Piastri, Leclerc in that exact order out of 1,063 people playing?
Well, that's a tough one. I'm going to guess around about, I'm going to say about 673 odd people.
Okay, it's good we're doing a little test before we get to the quiz later on, because that's slightly on the high side. it was just 10 people who had exactly that podium.
Wow.
I honestly thought myself it would have been a little bit higher too. Probably not in the 600, but yeah, only 10 people who had that podium in that exact order. Let's then also go to the podium that we had during the race. How many people do you think went with Verstappen, Ocon and Gasly?
Well, I think since Alpine is such a wild card this weekend, I might as well go a little bit lower, because I don't think many people expected it. So I'm going to say 6.
Yeah, it was somewhat of a trick question, but there was no one who went with that podium.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, with two Alpines on the podium, I guess it's not something that most people
no, I don't think so.
Go with, and nobody did. But anyway, yeah, so the average score this weekend was 28.8 points, which is fairly low, especially given that it was a sprint weekend, so there was bonus points. Actually, the average score for the sprint was 14.3 points, and the average score for the race was 14.5 points. So actually, only very little more in the race than in the sprint. And yeah, I guess the podium had a bit of effect on that, because of course with the two Alpines, yeah, a lot of people didn't score any of the P2 and P3 points. But we're going to see later on how many people actually had Ocon and Gasly on P2 and P3 in the quiz. We're going to have another guest come on to play the quiz against you, but that's a little bit later on.
Cool.
So 28.8 points for the average score, and let's have a little look at the podium of Forecast F1 during this weekend. So on P3 we actually had Pedro Sipli, and it was his home race. Pedro is from Brazil, so nice to make it to the podium.
Yeah, well done.
On this weekend. 66.3 points for him. On P2, we had a player from the Netherlands. It was Sanne Visserman with 68.4 points. And on P1, and actually the first Polish winner in Forecast F1, in the history of Forecast F1, was Miloš Winiarski, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, with 69.3 points. So not only his first win, but the first Polish win in Forecast F1.
Well, well done to you, mate. I think that's a big congratulations, I think, from everybody that's in order. So if you possibly on the chat group on WhatsApp, maybe just send a congratulations out to those top three names. I think that's a very high score from what you're telling me the average is. And I think we were all thrown for a bit of a spin on predictions, especially with the weather that caused a lot of upset. But yeah,
definitely. And of course, also with it being a sprint weekend, we had to make predictions blind, of course, so makes it extra difficult. So I think the applause is deserved. And there's also perhaps a little bit of jealousy in my voice there. I think both of us, we've never made it to the podium, so
not in the entire game. You gotta,
we've got to have goals too, right?
Yep, so, exactly.
So yeah. So I counted the amount of players from each country, and this weekend again, most players were from Kenya, 80 players, and 65 players from Lebanon on P2, and on P3, Argentina with 58 players. And looking at the accumulated points for the countries, when we look at the top 25, we see that there's only two countries that swap places. Well, four countries that swap places, two place swaps. So Kenya overtakes Mexico for P7, and Zambia overtakes Belgium for P17. And the country with the most amount of places gained was the Northern Mariana Islands, with 5 places gained.
Well done then to the players of those countries. That's a really, really good achievement. I mean, I think what we probably also don't thank you enough as the organizer of this F1 community is that you don't just take into account the individual, but it's you forming smaller communities within countries that really help grow the sport for that country. And people find it as a safe and comfortable space to be able to talk to people with the same sort of interests as them. So, yeah, congratulations to those countries that moved up in the pecking order. Yeah, keep it up.
That's nice words from your side, and I definitely agree. It's actually fun to see all these communities forming, and also, yeah, the competition between different countries. It's actually funny now that you mention it. You're from South Africa. I know that all the people who joined during mid-season from Zambia and Kenya, we didn't have that many people from those countries at the beginning of this season, but they joined along the way, and I know for a fact that both of these groups of people, because most of them came from specific chat groups in WhatsApp from those countries, and I know that they were one of their biggest aims was actually to be ahead in the country standings, be ahead of South Africa, and unfortunately they both are right now, so nice to set goals and achieve them as well. Moving on to the scores in the overall competition for the whole season. So Rosario Finzi from France is the first player this season to cross the 1,000 point mark. He scored, he didn't score that many points actually this race. He scored 19.8, but with that he gets to 1,017 points. So he's the first player to do that. And
très bien.
On P2, yeah, definitely. And I mean, the lead that he's been having over the past, I don't know, we're now 21 races into the season, right? Yeah. I think he's been on the top one spot for, I don't know the exact amount of races, but for a very long time. And it doesn't really look to me like he's going to be beaten anytime soon.
No, I think he's the Verstappen of our community, it would seem.
Yeah, I think he's the Verstappen of 23 in the community. I think that's a very right way of putting it. Also looking at it, his competition, so the two players who have been on P2 and P3 out of the Mexican race, so that was Philip Hoyek, who I missed to mention last podcast episode, but he scored 23.5 points. And actually with that, he drops to P5 because there was a couple of players behind him that scored more points and overtake him. Same goes for Sumit Jaiswal from India, scored 26.3. So he drops to P7. So that means we have a new player on P3 and also a new player on P2. And on P3, we now have Joseph Morgan, who's been around the P4 until P6 spot during almost the whole of this season. So he finally gets to the podium as well. He scored 30.6 points. So congratulations to him. And we go to P2. And believe it or not, but the person who is now on P2 is Samantha. So Samantha, ooh, I would like to congratulate you with that. Unfortunately, you couldn't make it to the podcast, but you did get a very good score this weekend. You scored 38.5 points. And you're now on P2, so you know you're still in the running to win it. You're 22.1 points behind Rosario, so it's a decent point haul that you still need to make in order to get there. But it's definitely not impossible. So I'm very, very impressed.
Yeah, very well done, guys. To everybody that was mentioned there, probably can't remember half your names, but very, very well done, I think, on behalf of everybody. So, I mean, applause to you, Anton, for having to pronounce those names, because me and names don't mix well.
Yeah, well, they're sometimes they're easier than other times. I don't think this was a particularly difficult week in that respect, but actually last week I horribly pronounced the name of one of our Hungarian players, we had a good laugh after he listened to the podcast as well. So what I would also like to mention is so we have a collaboration with the DRS Lane, which is a Formula One shop in Beirut, and they give out a $10 voucher for the highest placed Lebanese player every weekend.
Oh, wow.
And this weekend that was Vanessa Basile, actually playing for the first time. So right there at the first
time,
scoring a P12 in your first try with 56.5 points and winning the $10 voucher. So nice. Congratulations indeed.
Yeah, congrats.
A very good result. I think that means it's also time that we have a little look at our results. Do you recall what podium you went with, Savannah, in the sprint race?
Goodness, in the sprint race, I think I had Norris first, if I remember correctly. Leclerc, I think I put second. I might be wrong. I can actually quickly check. I think my top three were...
You're right on the Leclerc one.
Yeah.
But you had...
I'm a Leclerc girly. And I know that there's a lot of girlies out there that are Leclerc fans. Not only girls. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, I divide my time between about two or three of the teams overall. So... I possibly put Piastri first, now that I think of it.
No, it was Verstappen, Leclerc, Norris that you went with.
Really?
Yeah, I can double check if you want, but I'm pretty sure.
Damn, okay. Well, maybe I was thinking, I probably mixed Verstappen up with the sprint and the actual race then.
Yeah, that's you're right. I'm just double checking now. Yeah, you went with Verstappen, Leclerc, Norris, and then in the race it was Norris, Leclerc, Verstappen. Actually,
yeah.
I also went with a Norris win in the race. It got you 13.9, not 39. That would have been nice. 13.9 points in the sprint race.
Yeah,
sorry for that. and 22.9 in the Well, I'm not very on spot today. It's getting late. Well, it's very late for you, actually. I mean,
yeah,
what time is it now in South Africa?
I'm about 2:15 in the morning right now.
Right.
But I'm wired on Red Bull, and I've got my stash here waiting for me so that I can continue with work into the later hours of the morning a little bit later.
Well, I'm at a point where I could also use a Red Bull, but I don't have one here. All right, well, you got 13.9 points for the sprint race, as I mentioned, and you scored only 9 points in the race, so that got you to a total of 22.9 points, yeah.
Not my best efforts. Result.
695 is your result.
Okay.
You're actually doing very well in the overall competition. If I remember correctly, you also made it into the top 20 a couple of races ago.
Yeah.
But prior to this weekend, you were on P29. You dropped to P36, so a 7 place drop, unfortunately.
Damn. Okay. Well, I know. Looking at what this weekend was in store for us, coming in to the entire weekend blind on predictions. I'm quite happy where I'm sitting. I think, I mean, I was around about the average for the sprint race, a little bit lower on the actual race itself. But yeah, it just makes it more interesting to see how you can go from top score to a bit of a intermediate and then a little bit of a mediocre score. As a brand new player, this is my first year playing the game. So yeah, I'm purely doing it just for the enjoyment of it. And when in doubt, put Perez as P8.
Right. I actually did that too, both on the sprint and the race. And he finished 8th actually in the sprint. But in the race, he finished 11th, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, I scored a few more points, but actually that was only due to having a good result on the sprint race. I scored 23.8 on the sprint race. I was actually there on a pretty high spot. But then in the race, I only scored 6.6 points.
So damn.
A little bit embarrassed by that. Got me a total score of 30.4 points, and that was a P391.
Nice.
Actually, with that, because I was previously on P32, I go 3 places up in the rankings, which means I'm now on your previous spot. So you were on P29. That's my new place.
So you're the one that dethroned me from my top 30.
Yeah, so to speak. Yeah, that's right. Actually, since you're playing for the first season, and some of you listening may also not be aware, so your final finishing position will be your race number for next year. So, Savannah, if you end up finishing on P36, where you're right now, that means you will have the racing number 36, in front of your name for next season.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Even if we can't win it anymore, that's still, you know, somewhat of a goal. I finished 52nd last year, so you know my goal this year is to finish ahead of that, and I'm on track, but you know there's still quite a bit of things that can happen, and especially right now with the race is being super unpredictable. It's becoming more and more difficult for me, but I guess for everyone. So we already mentioned Samantha's score, but actually Sam, that was quite a interesting one. She scored exactly the same amount of sprint points and race points. So it was both 19.25. So that got her a total of 38.5. And I've already mentioned it, but I think it's only deserved to repeat it. So she goes from P7 to P2. So
yeah, very well done.
So next time, Sam, when you're on the podcast, we're definitely going to talk a little bit about that. So that concludes all the scores for Forecast F1 for this weekend. And that means that only leaves us with playing the quiz. And like I had already mentioned, Savannah, we're going to get another guest on to play against you. And I introduce Cari Laura Escalante.
Hello.
From the Dominican Republic, who's going to go head-to-head with you on guessing how many players in the game had each driver correctly predicted on each finishing position, both in the sprint, both in the race. And the reward for the winner is, as it always is, the national anthem in the outro. So we're going to see whether we're either going to listen to the South African one or to the Dominican Republic national anthem.
Awesome.
All right, so let's start with Norris, who finished P1 in the sprint race. Savannah, how many people do you think out of the 1,063 people had Norris there on P1?
I'm going to say 486.
90.
All right, that means the first point goes to Savannah because it was 347 people. So she gets closer with the 486, which means we go to Piastri on P2. Cari Laura.
55.
I think I'm going to say 345.
That means we're at a draw because it was 40 people at Piastri on P2, which actually surprises me.
Yeah.
It's quite a low number. Yeah. Meaning we go to the first finishing Ferrari in the sprint race, Leclerc on P3, Savannah.
Well, I think since he's a fan favorite, I'm going to go with 673.
80, I think.
All right. Well, the 80 is closer to the right answer because it was 223. You were both quite far apart from one another. But that means it's 2-1 at this point. Meaning, Cari Laura, you go first with Verstappen on P4.
50 people.
I'm probably going to say 93.
All right, the 93. It's still 101 places away because it was 194. But it does mean you're closer. So it's 2-2. And we move to the second Ferrari finishing on P5. Savannah?
I'm going to go with 187.
45.
45, all right. Well, the 187 is actually quite close to the right answer because it was 177.
Ooh.
So that's another point for Savannah, yes. And that means we're now at P6. Russell? Okay, I think it's actually Cari Laura who goes first on this one,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
65.
Sorry, what did you say?
65.
Okay, 65.
And I'm going to go with 161.
All right, that means that's another point for Savannah because it was 308 people at Russell on P6, quite a lot. And that brings us to Pierre Gasly on P7.
I'm going to go with 22.
I think 40.
40, all right. Well, you're both right in guessing a little bit with a lower number. It was even less than that. It was 9 people with Gasly on P7.
Wow.
So yeah, very, very few. It means that we go to the last one. We already mentioned him earlier, finishing on P8. At least I had him there, so that's at least one person. But how many other people had Perez on P8, Cari Laura?
95.
I think since I put him there as well, that makes two of us, Anton. And I think it's become...
You're going to go with two?
I think it's... No. Definitely not. I think there's a little bit
I've
more...
almost written it down.
I definitely think that a lot of people have started kind of placing him there as a safe spot. So I'm going to go quite high on this. I'm going to say 695.
Well, it's indeed higher than the 95, but you're overdoing it. And that way, giving away the point, it was 289.
Oh, wow.
So that means that actually Carilaro is closer. Yeah,
nice.
So means we are now 5-3 and we move to the race, to the Sunday. And I think that means it's time for Savannah to go first. And of course, it was Verstappen who finished first. So how many people had Verstappen on P1?
I'm going to go with 441.
I think 200.
Well, the 200 is closer. It was 139 people. And,
oh, wow. That's quite surprising.
Well, the only thing I can say is that, Forecast F1 has seen different times where about 95% of all the people playing had Verstappen on P1.
Mm.
Those times are behind us.
Yeah.
But, which brings us to the two interesting ones, I believe, Ocon and Gasly. So let's first go to Ocon. Carilaura, how many people had Ocon on P2?
6 people.
All right, you have 6 people.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go very close to that answer and say 5.
Well, you chose the right side of 6. Woo-hoo! Because it was no one. There was no one who had Ocon on P2. Yeah. Actually, what I do need to mention is that even though there was nobody who had Ocon on P2, actually, Carilaura, your brother had Ocon on P1.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, congrats to him.
I think he's the only person. Yeah.
No, but he was the only person, actually, who had him on P1. There were two. I actually looked at all the P1s predicted for this weekend, and the two outliers were definitely one player who had so that was Ocon on P1. There was also somebody with Tsunoda on P1.
Okay.
And in the end, when I saw that prediction coming in from your brother, I was laughing, but then actually during the qualifying session on the Sunday, I already had different thoughts in mind.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I definitely didn't expect him to get 50% of those 25, of those 18 points for Ocon. So very, very good result for your brother. But nobody had him there on P2, which brings us to the other Alpine, which was Gasly. Savannah, how many people then went with Gasly on P3?
I'm going to be a little bit adventurous and say 2.
I think 5 people.
All right. Well, it's the very same answer. There was nobody who went with Gasly on P3. So that means the 2 is obviously closer than 5. So another point for Savannah. Let me do a quick count. We're at 7-4. Moving to Russell on P4, which is Carilaura's guess.
75.
I'm going to do 63.
Well, the 75 is very, very close to the right answer. It was 74 people. So that's a very, very good guess. So that's another point for you. It means we're 7-5. Moving to Leclerc, the only point finishing Ferrari during the race. And that one's for Savannah.
I don't think we expected him to end up being as low as what he was. So I'm going to say 56.
I think 54.
Well, both of you are very close. With the previous one, Carilaura, you were only one away, but now Savannah is only one away because it was 57.
Nice.
Yes, you're both getting better at this. I'm waiting for the day the two of you play against Samantha and beat Samantha. But
we're coming for you, Samantha.
Yeah, exactly. P6 Norris. I lost track of who. I think it's Carilaura who goes first, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is.
24.
And I'm going to do, I think, 21.
Oh, again, you guys are pretty close to the right answer. 16 people putting Norris on P6. So it means Savannah gets the point because the 21 is closer than 24. Means we go to Tsunoda on P7.
I think I'll probably put him at around 45.
I think 12 people.
Nice. Actually, that's very close to the right answer. It was only 10 people. So only two away means another point for you, Cari Laura. And that means we go to Piastri on P8.
29.
I'm going to go with 16.
And I add another point to the tally of Cari Laura because it was 40 players, 4-0. So
goodness.
The 29 is only 11 away. Yeah. Lawson on P9.
I'm probably going to put him at around 38.
I think 10 people.
That means Savannah's close to the right answer because it was 66 people. So, meaning we only have two left. First, Hamilton, and then we go to Fastest Lap afterwards. So, Hamilton, how many people had Hamilton on P10, Cari Laura?
15.
And I'm going to go with, I think, 27.
That's a point for Cari Laura because it was only 7 people at Hamilton that low on P10. Yeah. Well, it means there's only one left for us to decide it, and that's Verstappen on fastest lap.
Okay. I think I'm going to put it a little bit higher and possibly go 93.
I think 100 people.
It's indeed a little bit higher. It's even higher than the 100. It's 147. So that means it's 1 point added for Cari Laura. That means the final tally is... 8, 2, 3, 4, 5. That means it's 8 for Cari Laura and 11 for Savannah. So means you win it.
Congratulations, Savannah.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Well, that means we're gonna hear a South African outro, but not before we look ahead. We have 2 weekends of rest, and after that we go to Las Vegas.
Yeah, can't wait for that one.
Yeah. Actually, I think all of us were pretty surprised last year when everybody was expecting it just to be a spectacle around the race, but the race in the end was very good. I remember that overtake on the last lap of Leclerc on Perez, I think for P3, if I'm not mistaken. It was a very good race, so I'm looking forward to it too, actually. And it's going to be interesting to see if we get another exciting race like that. And like you were saying previously in the podcast, even though maybe some things seem to be decided, I think there's still more than enough to watch for.
No, I definitely agree with you there. And yeah, we'll be going to the city that, or one of the cities that almost never sleeps. So yeah, viva Las Vegas.
Exactly. And Cari Laura, who are you going to put on P1 for the race in Vegas?
Verstappen.
Yeah? You're going to go with Verstappen?
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, my problem is that, you know, with recent weeks, I don't know anymore who to put on P1. I went with Norris this time, but I don't know what which team it's going to favor there in Las Vegas. Savannah, do you have any, of course, this time we're going to be able to watch FP1 and FP2 before we make our picks, but what does your gut feeling say at this point?
Well, like I said earlier, I'm a Leclerc girly, and I'll say it proudly. So I'd like to put Leclerc, but as a backup option, I'd probably be putting Norris. I know that he's been pretty good on the street circuits. And if McLaren's rear wing decides to play along, then we might have quite an interesting race in our hands in the next few weeks.
Fair enough. I guess we'll know in 3 weeks from now.
Yep.
All right. Well, I thank you a lot for coming on, Savannah. I think you had a couple of very interesting insights, and also a very well accomplished win on the quiz. So, like we were saying, I think it's also time you play against Sam later on. and for us to hear a little bit more of the South African anthem. I can't wait.
Awesome. Thanks, Anton, for having me, and good luck to everybody else for the rest of the year in whatever you guys are busy with. End the year on a high note, and yeah, just stay safe out there.